This morning, we wrap up our week-long series called This Is Why Not, Finding Hope and Resilience in Troubled Times. The Netflix series 13 Reasons Why, the death of Project Semicolon founder Amy Bluhl, the study that discovered a group of middle-aged white Americans are dying what is called deaths of despair. We started to wonder what those three things had in common, and it seemed as though it was perhaps an absence of hope. Hope and resilience are what make life possible for most people. But where do those skills come from? Can you build skills? Can you exercise them like a muscle? Can you immunize yourself with hope and resilience against despair in trying times? All this week, we've been looking at different ways that folks are trying to do that. This morning, our guest is Rick Gertzema. He's the manager of child adolescent behavioral health at Amberwing, and he joins us this morning on the phone. Hey, Rick, good morning.
Good morning.
So one of the things that we want to talk about to get started is are a couple of skill sets called CBT and DBT.
Right.
If you're curious, it's cognitive behavioral therapy and dialectical behavioral therapy. But that's not the important part. The important part are the skills themselves and a way of looking at situations when you're in a moment, your brain goes blank. Maybe the boss comes in and points at you and says, "You in my office," or you open a note in your locker and your best friend has just said something really unpleasant, or fill in the blank. The emotional upset that you can relate to, and these are skills that you can use to keep you from kind of spiraling out of control emotionally or maybe lashing out, saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing. Let's talk about those skills, Rick. Tell us more.
Well, I think, one of the most important things is to recognize, of course, how can we create some kind of a common language so that we don't get stuck in a theoretical approach. What we're really doing is trying to talk about a way in which there can be specific skills and certainly, DBT is one of those ways to create a skill set, and a big part of DBT really is recognizing core mindfulness skills. And when you talk about those moments in which stress enters our life, really, really acutely, right now, the boss walks in, there's a terrible note that was left in my locker. Recognizing first and foremost, that's a moment. And in that moment, trying not to go to negative emotion and not getting stuck in what we would say in the DBT world is emotion mind, trying to figure out how do we cope with just that moment that's right in front of us.
We go as people, and I pride myself on the fact that I can sometimes go from a phone call, from a robocall that says, your bill is overdue. And I can go from there to my entire family will die in a ditch. And I can do that in about 1 second.
Right. And so what we're talking about really is a practice of those moments, because we know it's not if those moments are going to happen. It's when those moments happen. How do we keep our feet on the ground, keep our heels on the floor, and know that we really can survive that moment? It's not predictive of what's going to happen for the rest of the day. It's not predictive of what's happened in the past. It's that moment. And so those core mindfulness skills are really important, knowing when is emotion mind, when is reasonable mind, and when are those wise mind moments where we say, I can get through this moment. And so if we have the core mindfulness skills first, then we can recognize, if we can get ourselves, recognize the emotion mind, get into a reasonable mind moment and say, I need some skills that are just going to help me survive this crisis moment.
Well, let's be specific, Rick. The boss comes and points at me and says, I want to see you in my office. And you know that, maybe there have been some talks about layoffs.
Right.
So you know, I want to see you in my office in 5 minutes. You go back, you sit at your desk, your hands are shaking, you're about ready to cry. What do you do?
So now we're talking probably some self-soothe skills for people who would be able to maybe go into their office and look at a family picture. Look at pictures of their kids, look at pictures of their grandkids, maybe a stress ball, something that people could put in their hands, work through that stress. Maybe some people need to get up and move. They need to do an activity. So rather than going and sitting, some people need to get up and move. They need to do an activity. It could be, can I walk around the building? Maybe I need to go for a walk in the skywalk. And knowing this is, and again, it goes back to that, what do I need to do right now in this moment? It could be, I'm going to go to my office, I'm going to sit, I'm going to mindfully enjoy the tea that I just poured. Smell the tea, drink the tea, taste the tea, really using our senses and paying attention to the way that we're breathing. Because what we know is that our breathing, if we're under stress, and if we can simply regulate our breath, one of the first trigger reactions, of course, when we get tough news, if we pay attention to the way that we're breathing, we're likely breathing really shallow or we're holding our breath. So in that moment of bad news, it can turn into, oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to get through this? We're really not breathing all the way through our body, right? So it's how do we breathe, how are we aware of our breath, and really being aware of the moment that's right in front of us.
And it seems almost too simplistic to say to be aware of your breath, but if you realize that your brain isn't going to be able to cope
exactly
with the adrenaline that's flooding your system unless you give it oxygen, that it kind of becomes about, okay, oh man, the machine is really malfunctioning here briefly.
Well, and you know, you're exactly right, because if we think about, and not to get really too technical, except neurologically, when we get those kinds of incidents that happen in our life very unexpectedly, there is a neurological reaction. And you're exactly right. The adrenaline rush, our brain is kicked into crisis mode. And even if we paid attention to something as simple as how are we holding our hands when we get the tough news? Most of us under stress are not going to be sitting with our hands open. We're somehow going to be clenching that fist, closing our hand, wringing our hands together. And when we do those behaviors, it's paired with typically less deep breathing, more intense rapid breathing, and it's only going to keep the entire system firing and moving.
One of the other things I think, in addition to, okay, here are some ways to try to make yourself think and act, is to contrast that and I'd like you to help make people aware of the way our brain wants to work in that moment of crisis, because it seems like, you know, be in the moment. Well, what does that mean? Well, you know, the boss says, I want to see him in my office in 5 minutes. You sit maybe in your office, and your brain goes, I'm going to be fired. How am I going to pay the bills? How am
exactly.
I going to find another job? We're going to lose the house.
Exactly.
And it goes so fast, we don't even notice it.
We don't notice it. And actually, it's an excellent point, because if we think about the typical bell-shaped curve, when we think all the way back to school and the A students and the B students and the C students on the bell-shaped curve, what really happens when our system gets excited or stressed, that bell-shaped curve is no longer bell-shaped curve if we keep refiring those same stressful emotions. Oh no, I'm getting called into my boss's office. Oh no, I'm going to get fired. How am I going to tell everybody? How am I going to provide for my family? How am I going to make my payments? Every thought that in those moments fires keeps the entire neurological system at its peak. It doesn't allow the system to reset itself. Most of us have a bell-shaped curve with our emotion neurologically where we will peak and then our brain will want to come back down to stability. It'll want to stabilize itself. It's the thoughts that we're having that will continue to refire. And while we're refiring, we're keeping ourselves in that sort of hyper-aware, hyper-vigilant, that hyper-state, which is only going to cause more stress.
And so when we talk about, as we have been throughout the week, when we talk about people who have reached a point of despair where they consider taking their own lives, either for people that are experiencing those thoughts or the people who are with them and who love them and who see them kind of spiraling into despair, it sounds like one of the most helpful things that either you can do for yourself or for someone else is to try to get those thoughts, try to interrupt that stream of thoughts that say, you've got to take an action.
Right.
Some
exactly.
kind of, and frequently it's the wrong action.
Right. So the trick with any of our emotions, much like with physical ability to go and run a marathon, everything is about practice. In a moment of stress, if we don't have a skill set established, if we don't really believe that we have the skills to cope with that moment, then I think we find ourselves going and resorting to what were old patterns. If we practice in good times, if in reasonable mind we can get the skill set ingrained, it's like riding a bike. Once you learn those skills, when we put our children on a bike for the first time and they fall and they hurt and they tip over and they're not sure of themselves, what do? They just fall off the bike or they tip or they skin their knees. With practice, they don't even think about all of those little tiny skills that they had to acquire to get to the point of riding that bike. The same is true when we talk about coping emotionally. If we practice a skill set, if we practice and we believe in our reasonable mind that there are skills that we can use, and if we can use that common language in those really stressful moments, then we have a chance of getting through the moment.
And to say, you know, I evolved this way. You know, my boss is really not a saber-toothed tiger. I really don't need to turn around and run. You know, nobody's going to try to chase me down and have me for lunch. I need to just, you know, breathe in, breathe out. And
that's only going to be a moment.
Yeah.
So you're called into the boss's office, and reasonable mind will say, okay, this is going to be a really stressful, radical acceptance. This is going to be a really stressful 5-minute, maybe a 10-minute meeting, and then I'm going to have to figure out what to do after that 10-minute meeting. What I'm going to do is go in, I'm going to be holding my hands open, I'm going to be breathing as openly and as deeply as I can, and I'm not going to talk, I'm going to listen, and then I'm going to excuse myself. And then that intense moment is over. There are skills to get through that 5 minutes.
And that sometimes, especially when we talk about people that are really spiraling into despair, it's getting through that really awful moment.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's
right.
I'm of course spacing on Crimes of the Heart, the play Crimes of the Heart.
Yeah.
And the mother in the show had taken her own life, and she'd also taken the life of the family cat. And one of the daughters is in despair. And she opens the oven, and she stuffs her head in, and another sister comes in, and the three of them are talking, and one of them says to the other two, we just need to find a better way of getting through these bad days.
Yes, and not even sad days as much as sad moments.
Yep.
Because the moments that seem to drag on forever and ever is because neurologically we keep refiring the grief and the despair and the pain because we can't find the skill to cope with that really difficult moment. And we know all of us are going to experience despair and pain and hurt and sad. And if we can practice skills like we practice riding a bike, in those moments we'll have a skill set we can fall back on.
It gives you a doorway. It gives you a way out of that moment.
Exactly. Rick, and through that moment.
Rick, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I really appreciate your joining us this morning.
Thank you for asking.
Rick Gertzema, our guest this morning. He is the manager of Child Adolescent Behavioral Health at Amberwing. And our guest this morning as we conclude our week-long series called This Is Why Not, Finding Hope and Resilience in Troubled Times. You can find the entire series on our webpage at KUMD.org. And there's also a whole list at the end of every post of a lot of helpful resources. If you want to do a little bit more looking around or print off that list maybe and tuck it in your pocket just in case it comes in handy.